Hello, RiceCast family. Welcome back for another episode of the RiceCast. We are at Calvary Church in Clearwater, Florida. I am here with Mr. Willie Rice. Pastor Willie, how are you today?
It's good. Good to be with you. It's been quite a week in America and quite a week at Calvary. There's the good, the bad, the ugly, the tragic. But we're doing well. And looking forward to gathering our church this weekend for the first time in over 2 months. And would love to be focused only on that. A lot of other things happening, but we are excited about gathering with the Calvary family this weekend.
Yeah, I was going to say, that was a great lead-in, Pastor. That was a great
perfect
grab the audience, have them prepared. I wanted to start with two pieces of good news. And the first is that we are meeting this weekend, or was starting Thursday, right?
Yep, first weekend, first service of the weekend is Thursday night,
right,
at the Clearwater campus only. And then, you know, I don't know when people are listening to this, obviously, but then, of course, all three on Saturday, all three campuses host a service at 6, and then all three campuses host a service at 9:30 and 11. So 9:30 and 11:30. First service Thursday night.
And we won't go through all the intricacies, the nuance, the ins and outs of things that will be different. But I do think this is something people are asking themselves before they go out right now. Do you need to bring a mask if you're coming to church?
It's completely up to you.
Okay.
Our guest services people will be wearing masks.
Okay.
Because we want to make sure that we're creating the proper atmosphere and send the right signal and take care of people. Just like when you walk, though, into a grocery store or a shopping store, it's optional. You see some people with masks, some people not with masks. What I can promise you is you will be able to practice social distancing if you come to the service. We are going to work hard to make sure you're not being seated next to someone. That's why we're adding services. There'll be plenty of space. It'll feel a little empty, which, you know, you love to have a big crowd in a church, but it'll feel empty, but we're doing that on purpose. That's why we're adding so many services. So you will be able to practice social distancing, but the mask is optional. Some people really want to wear those, and other people do not. So we're not going to require what the government doesn't require, you're certainly welcome to wear a mask.
And then another thing I think has been on my mind a lot, I don't know if it's going to be on everybody's, but there is a part of the Calvary Clearwater campus for sure, Sunday morning tradition, is the community coffee that is in the corner. And people come from miles around to get the Mardi Gras blend, which is available some weekends.
Okay, that's very good.
I'm assuming we're not going to be able to do community coffee.
All of our coffee cafes are going to be closed. You know, a lot of things won't be back to normal. And what we've tried to say to people is during this coming period, this summer really, starting this weekend, through probably about the time school starts, think of this as we're rounding the curve, heading back to something more like normal rhythms. And we'll gradually be adding stuff back in when it's safe to do so, as phases open up in society. But as you come back, a lot of things will be different. There's no child care. There's no preschool or children's ministry right now. We understand that will cramp, and that may even delay some people from coming back. We understand that. But for a lot of reasons, we felt like we shouldn't try that right out of the gate. Our cafes, as you mentioned, the Mardi Gras brand, I was not aware of how popular it was. Those things are closed. Just, you know, so there will be some differences.
Right.
But you will be able to come to church. You will be able to worship. And we think it'll be a great experience.
Certainly looking forward to that. Love for everyone that's able to come.
And if you're looking for plenty of space, I would just encourage the Thursday night here at Clearwater or the Saturday night options at any one of our campuses, because obviously the most crowded service would probably be the 9:30 service on Sunday,
right,
followed by the 11:30 service. So if you want to be in a place where there's, you know, there's plenty of room, consider just altering your rhythm for a while, and then we will be back to a more normal schedule probably by the end of the summer. But this is the schedule coming out of the gate.
And are you excited? Are you excited to be back in the room?
You know, it's just almost emotional that we've been apart this long from people that we love and a church family that we love. It's been an emotional thing. And I think even if there's 100 people in the room or two, you know, and it looks empty, it's just going to be so wonderful to see people that we know and love and to be able to worship with others. That's an important part of our faith. So, yes, I'm looking forward to it.
Definitely. Wanted to start out with that good news today. I'm you may have mentioned it, but Seminole and Eastlake, what's their
Saturday
situation look like?
Same thing as, you know, same thing on Saturday and Sunday.
Okay.
6 o'clock on Saturday, 9:30 and 11:30 on Sunday. Okay. All three of our campuses are that way.
Got it. Second piece of good news, Pastor, to start off the Rice Cast today. I haven't heard much from the Murder Hornets.
I think we skipped over that.
I think a couple weeks ago.
I think we missed the Murder Hornets in 2020. Everything we
missed. Oh, no, we had Murder Hornets.
But they just were only about 2 days.
It was just for a minute. It was almost like there was a gap of not as much to talk about, and then we had the Murder Hornets.
Yeah.
But that seems to have quieted down.
Yes, we have other things.
We have other things that have taken the place.
Oh, my.
So, obviously, one thing I'll say, too, kind of in maybe what is more of an announcement thing in the beginning, is that tonight where you're taking part in a panel,
mm-hmm.
is that happening here?
Yes.
It's happening here at the Clearwater campus?
Yep, and it's online on all our media platforms. Of course, I don't know when people are listening to this podcast.
Right.
In all likelihood, they're hearing it after the panel.
Sure.
And in all probability, I can't 100% promise it, but in all probability, it will stay posted on our media platform so people can access it. That's our hope to do so.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always the chance something precludes that. But that's our so if you haven't seen it, hopefully it's still on our media platform. It's our hope and intent to have it posted.
And the topic of the panel is, I'm forgetting the title.
We're calling it, and this was one of our deacons had this title, and I thought it was a great title. Help Me Understand. Help mm-hmm. Me Understand is the title of the panel. Help Me Understand, and the subtitle is An Authentic Conversation About Race, Social Justice, and the Gospel.
Mm. So obviously this is coming in the aftermath of what really was just a slew of stories that came out. I mean, it's the video that I'm sure many of us saw. It is a jarring, pretty traumatic video for those of you that haven't seen it, of George Floyd mm-hmm. and the interaction with the police officer where he was killed. There was a video of a woman in Central Park mm-hmm. with the dog and calling the police in that situation. Certainly not taking this in a political way, but there was a Joe Biden quote that came out on a radio show. Mm-hmm. Just a tough.
We've had one thing after another, yeah.
And so it's certainly a timely conversation to talk on the panel today. So hard to even start this, but what are some first reactions to all of those things for you?
Well, you know, first, to back way, way up, it has been quite a year. I mean, unlike maybe anything, the cumulative effect that we've lived through, certainly people that are old enough might remember other tumultuous times. I would have been a small boy, unable to remember 1968 when you had the assassinations of Martin Luther King, Bobby Kennedy, and then you had racial riots and the political conventions that year. Many riots in major American cities, I think, took place.
Yeah.
It was a year in which America was really, really on fire metaphorically and in some places literally. And we maybe, I'm not sure if anything has happened as bad as that. We've certainly had periods in which racial tension has flared up, the Rodney King episode in the 90s, and others come to mind. But this has been extraordinary, and an extraordinary not in a fun or entertaining way, but in a tragic way and in a heavy way. We've had incidences of brutality, police brutality, or criminal activity caught on video before. This isn't the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody, I think it was Will Smith, had tweeted out, you know, in his opinion, racism isn't on the rise, it's just getting videoed.
Mm.
And there's probably a lot of truth in that.
Yeah.
But the George Floyd murder that took place in Minneapolis is just jarring.
Mm.
I think you said that. It's just no other, it's just heartbreaking to watch it. And I bet most Americans have seen at least part of it. It just is, there's so many thoughts, it's hard to know where to begin. I personally, and I think we as a church family, love and appreciate law enforcement. We have many cops in our church, and they are good people. They are courageous people. They are brave people. In my life, they've always been the good guys. You know, that's part of my cultural corner. And but they are, I think, mostly the good guys. You know, so this is not anti-law enforcement, anti-police. This is, however, a very real incident that occurred.
Yeah.
And other incidences have occurred. There's no question about that. And this thing that occurred in Minneapolis is just shocking. I don't know any way other, you know, there, occasionally you'll see something and you think, well, there's two ways to look at it, or there's another way to look
sure.
at it. We don't know what happened before the video. You know, there's always a part that you don't know what happened before the video. That's just human life. But whatever happened before the video, to see that, you know, the knee on the neck of a man crying out for help, crying out that he can't breathe, and it stays on it for, I think, close to 9 minutes, I think, and until his life ebbs away.
Mm.
It's there just are not sufficient words to describe how horrific that scene was.
Yeah, and I just before we get too far removed from it, there was, you know, even prior to that, there was the Ahmaud Arbery thing. Mm-hmm. And then here in Florida, now this was several years ago, Trayvon Martin happened here in Florida, right?
Yep.
So you're right to say, with the Arbery being considered, it is like this a year, obviously, with COVID leading up to it. And there was even a lot, I know I had read, about how COVID was impacting the black community, even more so.
Yeah, that's a kind of an underreported story, because it is true that COVID has hit minority communities, even Hispanic communities, black communities, in a heavier way. And a lot of people speculated as to the reasons why. And very few people have traced what we're seeing over the last week to that. I think there is some connection, though. I think people have really suffered this year.
Mm.
They have been, again, the quarantining, the isolate, as we've talked about many times. It's not, that's just not what we're made to do.
Mm.
And I'm not saying that's why they're protesting.
Sure, sure.
I'm saying that is a thread in this fabric. That is a story here that, you know, there is some pent-up frustration, the economic difficulty that people have felt, and people who are in poorer communities are going to feel it harder.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones who have lost jobs in a disproportionate way to maybe to people who could work from home or whatever. So in communities that are struggling economically, you throw this in, there is even that built up resentment, frustration, and then you see this case, which rips open a festering wound that has never fully healed in American culture along the lines of race, and it has just blown up, obviously. Mm-hmm. Over the last week, none of us, I don't think even a week ago, could quite have anticipated what we've seen in the last week.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, you know, one of the things I want to talk to you about specifically today, because you're going to be involved in this panel tonight, which I hope we're able to keep live. I hope people are able to either watch it live or watch it after. But you and I are white men, and so we are coming at this from our perspective, our life experience. You know, you said earlier, when you think of police officers, it's you think of your interactions with a police officer, and it's hard to understand them in any other way. But for... So I don't know. I guess I'm just sort of asking, how can we best relate to a community that's looking at people that look like them being treated this way? How can we even start to empathize? Where do you even start that process?
Well, so many have given better advice than I, and many of the black community have actually been, there have been a number of good videos. I've watched a number of black leaders who are trying to answer that question that people perhaps in a white community are saying, what can I do?
Yeah.
Help me do better. And who have, you know, obviously there are voices that are just angry and you know, needing to shout that anger. But there have been some people who have a controlled anger, you know, and have said, okay, I'll answer the question. And they answer it better than I can. But if I were to boil it down, I've heard people say, I'll tell you what, I heard a friend of mine, a friend of yours also, a local pastor, and he said it this way. One is to look. Quit looking the other way. I mean, one of the first things that the Good Samaritan did is he saw the man who was injured on the side of the road. He did not pass by on the other side, as, by the way, the priest and the Levite did, religious figures. He saw. So first of all is look. This is not a time to stick your head in the sand. Look, number two is listen. Listen to people.
Hmm.
And this is a big one. It's what we're trying to do tonight. This is beyond one conversation. But the problem in America, and by the way, I'll give you the final outline before I forget it, and then I want to come back and talk about listen, is love.
Right.
Look, listen to people, let them tell their story, and then remember, we who are followers of Christ are called to love.
Mm-hmm.
And we are to love our neighbor as ourselves. That's the Jesus gave the greatest commandments, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And then he said, and the next is just like it, which he wasn't saying it comes in second. He was saying, if you think you love God, then you have to do this.
Yeah.
Love your neighbor as yourself. And then somebody said, well, who is my neighbor? And he tells the story of the Good Samaritan.
Right.
Which is the person in need. So that answers the question who my neighbor is. It is people who look different than me.
And maybe not to be lost there. The Good Samaritan is a pretty racially charged story.
Very racially charged story, which reminds us that this ethnic tension, these racial fault lines, this is not just an American problem. It's a human problem. And it has existed as long as human beings, at least since the Tower of Babel, where humanity was divided along the lines of then of language and then most probably over time, as a result of that, race as well. Some say racial, it may have existed before that. But you have the Tower of Babel, which is a picture of humanity being divided along the lines of race and language and so forth. Ethnicity, really.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, this is a human problem. And you're right, the Good Samaritan is a racially charged story. Listening, I want to go back in this. So look, listen, love.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good outline. What are we to do? Listen, that may be the hardest one.
Yeah.
And that's what we're trying to do tonight. This is beyond one conversation. But the problem I see right now that has gotten worse in America, not better, is that we have become divided, so divided culturally and politically. And the social media and the current news situation has exacerbated these intense divisions. People are listening to an echo chamber. We are, in some ways, we're more segregated than ever because we're segregated by ideology. We're in our corner listening to people who think exactly like we think, listening to news brought that confirms all of our biases, and we're not listening to someone. And here's what I would say to people, and we're trying to do this. I'm trying to learn this myself. You can lower your guard, lower your defenses. I'm not trying to tell you your corner is wrong. I'm not trying to convince you to vote a different way. I'm not trying to say you're wrong. But sometimes healing just starts with, listen, tell me what you have to say, which is why when Shane Scott, one of the deacons at Calvary, who's a wonderful black brother, said to me, we should call the panel, help me understand. It was his idea.
Yeah.
I thought, beautiful. That is, I can't. That's it. You can't improve on that. Help me understand.
Yeah.
We must have these conversations, and we must listen. And sometimes when you have conversations with people who have been hurt or they're angry, you won't agree with everything. Sometimes you will hear things that make you feel uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes your reflex is to be defensive, to go, wait, that's not true. That's not fair. What about this? That's the favorite game in America today. Mm-hmm. What about that? Well, somebody will go, well, that's wrong. And then instead of saying, yes, that's wrong, we go, well, what about what he said yesterday? Well, what about what she said last Tuesday? And we never listen. That's just playing a game and never listening to say, okay, let's talk. Let me hear you talk about the situation before we play the what about game. So that's what we're trying to do tonight. And I would think that one of the things I would say to white brethren, to black brethren, to brethren who are Hispanic, any racial line, we got to listen to one another.
Yeah.
You know, which is have a cup of coffee together, have lunch, cultivate friendships across racial lines, look for those opportunities, and if you don't have those close opportunities, then listen to others worth listening to. Don't just listen to the angriest voices.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to people who are trying to say something, and don't shut them out because you disagree with them.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you have to allow an angry voice. You know. Sometimes, like when I've dealt with people in marriage counseling or families, somebody gets angry.
Mm-hmm.
And anger can be really deep, especially if it's been buried there for a while. And I've had to say, I don't do a lot of marital counseling personally anymore. We have a lot of people do that a lot better than I do. But when a person is angry, I've had to say sometimes to a spouse, you know what, you need to let them talk. And it's going to hurt you a little bit. And you're going to want to argue. You're going to want to quit listening and defend. You're going to want to win a debate. And I've told some people, do you want to win an argument or do you want to win a marriage? Because maybe in this case, you can't do both.
Right.
You want to win an argument or you want to win a person? If you want to win an argument, debate. You know, you say something, I counter, you counter, we go boom, boom. It's like a sword fight. But if you want to win a person, sometimes you just have to listen. And you have to listen long enough until you really understand what they're saying. And I have also learned that sometimes when people are angry, if they can say something, if they can know somebody hears me, somebody is listening to why I'm angry.
Right.
And you've probably had this happen. I've been angry before, believe it or not. I know it's a shock. But sometimes when you can articulate your anger, and hopefully in a constructive way, because it can be destructive and that's not helpful. But if someone can understand your frustration, it has a way of dissipating the anger. People go, okay, someone understands.
Yeah.
And you know what? I don't have to agree with everything you said.
Right.
I may think that some of your conclusions are a little out there or are beyond me, but I hear you.
Yeah.
I hear you. And I think many of, I cannot speak for our black brothers and sisters along these lines, but I think many of them are just longing to say, is somebody hearing us?
Yes, right.
Is somebody listening to what I'm trying to say instead of just arguing with me?
Right.
Well, we need to hear one another.
Yeah.
That's what I would say.
Yeah. When you listen, you're going to get a perspective that you can't have. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just keep coming back to that because it's obviously kind of the pressing issue right now. I think I may have even said this on a podcast before. There's a cartoon I refer back to a lot. It's just because I think it communicated the message so greatly. It's two eagles having breakfast, and it's the husband-wife eagle. And the one eagle says to the other, have you ever had a problem with the owls? And the other eagle says, no, I've never had any problem with the owls. They just seem great. And then the eagle says, yeah, I don't know what those mice are talking about. I'm in the same thing.
Yeah.
And you just think about that and you think, that's exactly it. How could an eagle know, you know what I'm saying?
What a mouse is feeling. Yeah.
You can't unless you listen. And so when we say, yeah, this has been my experience with the police. I have my brother-in-law was a police officer for a long time. The police officers in my life, my relationship there has been what my experience is. But that doesn't mean that that's everyone's experience. And even if I don't agree with, even if I can't share in that experience, I can listen and I can say,
right.
I hear you. That's what it is like
Tell
for
me
you.
That's a great. I'll remember that cartoon forever now. I think that's exactly right. We must listen to it. Someone else's experience is someone else's experience. And just because you haven't experienced it doesn't mean it's not true. And again, it doesn't mean that all police are bad. Most are not. Most of the police I know are fantastic human beings. We have many of them in our church. And by the way, many of them are hurting right now because they feel like unfairly tarnished by what has happened. And they have endured, a lot of them over the last several days, some really a harsh treatment. So I feel for them. I've talked to some of them. And we love them. We're praying for them. We appreciate them. But it doesn't mean that we don't listen when one of our brothers said, well, this has been my experience.
Yeah.
Listening can be hard to do. It can hurt. But I think it helps when you realize I don't have to agree with everything. I don't even have to say I share the same experience. But first, I need to understand my brother's experience.
Right.
And I can't do that if I don't quit talking and start listening. And that is what we aren't doing enough of in America, because social media and a very divided news media have created a situation in which our divisions are inflamed. We are talking to ourselves and we are not listening to one another. The body of Christ could be the antidote to that. It really can. The body of Christ ought to be where that is different, because what unites us is bigger than race, bigger than ethnicity, bigger than our background. You know, I really do believe that Christ is the hope of the world. And so who better to be modeling healthy conversations, healthy relationships? And again, that doesn't mean I'm going to agree with everybody in the body of Christ.
Right.
And some of it's just your experience is different than mine.
Right.
But we have to listen to one another. And you were telling me a story earlier about some guys who were talking, and I appreciated this, where, you know, when you start talking to people, we need to be gracious to one another, because we may not even ask the question the right way.
Right.
I think that people have avoided these conversations about race because they're afraid. Hmm. This is like the one area in America that if you mess up,
yeah,
you're in trouble, man. You're going to get labeled. And, we have that risk running tonight. You know, somebody says something, there are people on the right that are going to label you. Oh, you are a left-wing, woke, social justice warrior, right. Blah, blah, blah. You're just trying to appeal to that. And somebody on the left could accuse you of being a racist, or could accuse you of, because you ask a question in a clumsy way, or you don't fully appreciate an argument that you hear. And I get why everyone in the world, is kind of angry, but I hope we can model better than that. Mm. Let's love one another. Let's give one another the benefit of the doubt in the body of Christ, and let's have some hard conversations. But many people have avoided them for those reasons.
Yeah. And I was going to ask you some about that, because you posted to your personal Facebook pretty quickly. You're obviously hosting the panel tonight. Mm-hmm. You agreed to have this conversation with me on the podcast. So what goes through your mind when you decide it's time to say something?
That's a great question. And because I'm sure there are people who think I ought to say more.
Right.
And occasionally I've had people from all kinds of right, left, you name it. Because there's almost a national news story every week.
Right.
Some governor did something stupid. Some celebrity said something stupid. Something happened. And there are people, I've been criticized by people who said, why didn't you speak out about that?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a news commentator. I'm not a social media handle. Mm-hmm. I have social media. I have a love-hate relationship with it, really. There's a part of me wishes I could turn it off forever, because it just is such a, and it just brings out the worst in people. And it's a lot of it's one-way conversation, and it's just, there's a lot of ugliness there. I just don't like it. But I also know you reach people through it, so mm-hmm. It's a love-hate relationship. I've never felt like I was called to be a social news commentator. That is, if you want that, turn on Fox News. If you want that, turn on MSNBC,
right?
If you want that, there are plenty of places of people who wake up every day commenting on the news.
Right.
I think too many, frankly, my opinion. But there is no shortage of people who every day will comment from a right wing or a left wing, a conservative, liberal, whatever perspective, even a Christian perspective,
mm-hmm.
who have seen it as their role, their ministry, to get up every day and comment on the latest news. I listen to Al Mohler's blog almost every day, not every day, and it's a daily analysis of news and events from a Christian worldview. I can repeat it because I've heard it so often. A daily analysis of news and events. So you want a daily analysis of news and events? There's that blog and 1,000 others.
Yeah.
That's not my calling, to give a daily analysis of news and events. It's been to pastor a church and to preach. Having said that, there are times you need to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just hope people know my role every Sunday is not to give you a weekly analysis of news and what happened this week. Who
Right.
spoke out about abortion? Who spoke out about racism? Who spoke out about this? And then, of course, the problem is exacerbated when you have people from all different walks wanting you to say this about that and that
Right.
about this. So, I won't get it right. I'll just tell you this. I don't know how to get it right. I think there are moments where we need to put out a statement. We need to say, this is what I think about that. And the George Floyd murder was one of those.
Mm.
It was so egregious. It was so painful to people that I felt as if, and it seemed to be so clear cut. A lot of things I'm leery about, because we have seen things in the news. I could give you examples of this, where stories come out and you're going, I don't know. And you wait about 3 days, right? And it's not at all what we were told that it was.
Sure.
And people got outraged and went on and made statements. The Jesse Smollett, I think his name is Smollett. Is that the actor who fabricated the thing in Chicago a while back? So, when that came out, everybody, lots of people were online, on media, this is terrible, this is horrible, it's awful, and made statements.
Right.
And of course, had it happened that way, it would have been perfectly awful. I mean, just terribly awful.
Right.
But I didn't make a statement. Because I got to be honest with you, part of me was going, I'm not sure I believe that. It just didn't sound right. It just didn't sound credible to me. And, of course, if it had been a racially motivated and politically motivated attack, I would have, it would have been awful. But I didn't believe it. First time, I can say it now. I just didn't believe it. I thought, now I could have been wrong. But my first thought was, I don't really believe that.
Right.
And sure enough, you know, within about 3 days, the story started falling apart, and it was a terrible story. And I think that's a particularly terrible story because a guy like that, actually, to me, then when real stories happen where people have been harmed because of their race, then people are leery to believe the story because of a guy like that. That was a terrible thing.
Yeah.
So I don't try to comment on everything in real time. I just don't. And for those who live on social media and wish I lived on social media, I don't want to live there. I've seen the neighborhood. I'm not interested in living there. I will drive through occasionally and visit and make a few comments, but I'm not interested in arguing with people on social media. Some people do it, by the way. I'm not against it. Some people do it very, very well.
Right.
But I'm not sure what else they do during the day because, you know, they just have lots of time to tweet and post. And I don't enjoy that part of it. I would much rather enjoy having coffee with someone and having an animated conversation. I enjoy that.
Yeah.
But I don't know that that answered your question. I appreciate the question, though, because we will get criticized. I have been, and I will in the future. And I suppose every pastor deals with this. You said too much. You didn't say enough.
Right. And to enter one of the reasons why I ask it is to enter the conversation is to submit to that. It's almost there's almost a safety in never entering the conversation because then, well, I never talk about that kind of thing. And so I definitely thought it was noteworthy, having been a part of this church now for a while, to see you enter the conversation in the way that you did, and then to follow it up with a panel with some people from our community and different people being involved to even continue the conversation, which I think, for me, when I'm seeing people step into this, I think it's you're just saying what we talked about earlier. You want to look at the Black community, the Black people that come to this church, the Black people that are involved in whatever you are able to speak for, and you're saying, "I am listening. I just want to step out and say, I know this is a moment." Because I hesitate at all to get even more into this, but the video just, I think, affected everybody a lot differently. It was very clear.
Yep.
It was not, there wasn't a gun involved, right? A gun feels like it's very 1 second, you know? It feels like it's very, almost like can be like a tussle where it goes off on accident. This was just so different. It was like you watched that it just, and again, I'm not trying to make this traumatic for anybody if you haven't seen the video, and I'm not trying to trigger things for people. But I want to say first that I think it was great that you did step in. I think we need spiritual leaders speaking into this conversation because a lot of people are speaking into the conversation. And who better to lead from the front, like you were saying? We have got a model how to do this. I love what you said earlier, and I wanted to say this to podcast listeners. We did a podcast a while ago about an incident that happened with a church in South Florida. And there was a race element to it. And I started that podcast. Diehard Ricecasters may remember.
Oh, yes, I'm sure.
I started the podcast by saying, you know, hey, out on social media, there's not a lot of people that are like outright racist. There's not a lot of like outright racism going on. Something to that effect. You can go back and listen if you want to double check. And I've cringed about that statement so many times in these last couple weeks, especially. And I just want to piggyback that on what you said earlier. These conversations can be tough. In the same way that you, as a white person engaging in the conversation, we need to ask for grace. We might not be asking the right questions. We might not know enough. You know, Will Smith's quote, there's things that have been going on that have been documented. That shame on us for not being more familiar. In the same way that if you have Black people in your life that are a little bit angry right now, don't we have to extend that grace that way?
That's exactly right. That knife cuts both ways.
Yeah.
So if you want grace, and I would ask for grace. I don't like the cancel culture, which is where somebody trips up. We want them, you know, it's like, I don't know. What do you want me to do to them? Draw and quarter them? I mean, it's you know, they've got to be fired. They've got to be removed because they made a mistake.
Yeah.
But that it happens now. And I don't think it's a positive thing. I think we should be a little more gracious. People do make mistakes. And people, you know, how many people have not said a stupid thing somewhere in their life?
Right.
Like zero. The key now is just don't say your stupid thing on video somewhere. Don't say the stupid thing about an incident on a video, because then you'll get caught. People, we've all looked back and had cringeworthy moments where we said, and I'm not saying anything, you know, like malevolent here. I'm just saying people have, we've been irresponsible or flippant about something, or we ask it in the wrong way. You know, I want us to, if we trust one another, this is where friendship comes in. The fact that you have real relationships with people, when I know someone and I love them, I can easily forbear something when they maybe slip up or say something or get a little too angry or something, because I love them. Mm-hmm. I think the problem is we don't have enough friendships across racial lines. Mm. We just don't have enough friendships.
Yeah.
And one of the great things in my life in the last few years has been to build some real friendships with some black pastors that I've just grown to love. Two of them are on the panel tonight. I've just grown to love these men. One is a little older. One's a good bit younger. But they're good brothers. They're friends of mine. I've talked to both of them in the wake of this incident. And there were others. And to have people that you know, that you trust, and that trust you, gives us the freedom and the space to have the kind of conversation we're going to have. If you walked in tonight, and again, I don't know when people are listening to this, but if we walked into this panel and we were in our political corners and, you know, in this ring we have and in this side we have that. I mean, you're not going to have an authentic conversation. You're going to have a political debate. You get people in a room that say, hey, we love Jesus. We love one another. We trust one another. We know these are good men with a good heart and want to do the right thing. Now, can we have a hard conversation?
Mm.
I think that's the place to have it. And I think people can't have it because they don't have those friendships a lot of times.
Yeah. But I love the other thing you said in there. And maybe if that's – because, again, everybody's walking through this from their different places. If you're in the black community listening to this, you're experiencing this your way. We just want to be upfront and say we're both white men and are experiencing it the way we are. And I think the first point in that outline you walked through of look. Is also key right now. Just don't try and get – don't – almost, again, coming out of the situation where almost don't say, oh, I wish we could just stop talking about this. I wish we could just kind of get back to normal. Take a minute and make sure you don't miss the moment.
Yeah. And if I'm honest, there have been moments where I just didn't want to look.
Hmm.
You know, it's you got other things going on. It's a story in the news media. It's not around my front yard. It's not in my lap. And you just go, I don't want to look.
Hmm.
I don't want to look.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things I've learned out of this, and maybe we can collectively learn, is I understand you can't pay attention to everything going on around the world, but you need to have open eyes, compassionate eyes, and we need to look, and we need to listen, and we need to love. I got that from our friend JJ, by the way, so I need to give him credit here, or he might sue me. But we need to look at one another.
Yeah.
We need to listen to one another. We need to love one another.
And love comes back around to the, I love that, the story of the Good Samaritan. And what you're, again, if you're not familiar with the context going on there, why we say it's a racially charged story is that for a Jewish person to be traveling and be the one wounded on the side of the road, the Jewish people were not kind to the Samaritan people. They viewed them as lesser.
And it was an ethnic issue.
Yeah.
It wasn't just a religious issue. It was a religious issue, but it was rooted in ethnic from a Jewish mind, impurity, that they were half Jews. They weren't even half Jews by that point. They were some part Jew.
Right.
They are the descendants of what happened when the Jewish people were conquered by the Assyrian people. And then 700 years later, you have these descendants who have part Jewish blood.
Right.
And they were the Samaritans. But they had, in the Jewish mind, corrupted ethnicity. Mm-hmm. And they had, in the Jewish mind, corrupted religion, which they had corrupted the Jewish religion. And so they were looked down upon. They were seen as, you know, just like you would think of racial tension and racial prejudice here. That was very much evidence. And that's when you see that, the gospel jumps up now, because now when you see Jesus going through Samaria, now when you see Jesus conversing with the Samaritan woman, suddenly you realize, okay, there's a lot going on here that I just pasted over. This isn't just a story of a conversation. This is about Jesus on purpose breaking down the walls that had divided people and filled them with hate and bitterness and brokenness. And Jesus comes to bring us a better kingdom.
Yeah.
And he can.
Yeah. I heard another pastor say, Mike Todd, I think it was, said in a message, I'm going to paraphrase it, but it was something about racial reconciliation. And one of his first points was, I know it's going to happen because we talk about every tongue, every tribe confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. So I know it's going to happen and I can't wait. So I won't wait. And I'm going to start it now.
Yeah. We got to work on it now. And you know what? There's this tension Christians live with, which is we know the world is broken and it won't be completely fixed. It won't be healed till Jesus returns and fixes it. And yet the kingdom of God is at hand, Jesus taught us. We are to proclaim the kingdom and we are to be seeking the advance of the kingdom. So we believe it has come. There is this tension of we want to live with a kingdom ethic now and a kingdom reality now because the kingdom has come. We are citizens of the kingdom of God. We should be little outposts of heaven on this earth. And yet we also have this hope that it's going to be fixed. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean, and I love what you just said, it doesn't mean, oh, it's not going to be fixed until Jesus comes. Therefore, I'm not going to do anything about it.
Right.
It means it's not going to be completely fixed till Jesus comes, but it is going to be fixed. Therefore, let's get busy doing the work of Jesus that he's told us to do now. Let's make our communities better. Let's heal the racial divide where we can and know that we're always going to face brokenness, but we have important gospel work to do right now. So this is a huge, huge, huge conversation in evangelical circles. People are afraid to have this because there are people that will label you. One of the things that's happened in the last year is anyone that wants to have a conversation about like the gospel and race, like we're doing tonight, there's a group of people that say, oh, they're social justice warriors. That's become a negative, pejorative term from some conservatives. Oh, they're just they're just trying to be woke. And it's a pejorative term by some, and it's a admirable term for others.
Right.
And so people are like, I don't want to be on that side. I don't want to be on that side. So what are they going to say? What are they going to say about me? You know what? At some point, we just have to be more concerned with what God says about us.
Mm-hmm.
And beyond that, more concerned about what the people we know and love right in front of us think.
Mm-hmm.
Who cares about what somebody on social media who doesn't even know you thinks about some post because blah, 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 blah. Who, honestly, big deal.
Mm-hmm.
But the guys that I'm meeting with tonight, like, you know, Derek Nemore is our chairman of deacons. That doesn't belong to me. He's Calvary's chairman of deacons.
Mm-hmm.
He's our chairman of deacons. I care about that brother. He's a man of God, and I care about him. I care about the guys on that panel. I know them. I love them. I've prayed with them. I listen to them. So I care about them, and that matters a lot more to me than what, you know, somebody in Idaho with a anonymous Twitter handle thinks.
Yeah, yeah. And so I think that's exactly where we were going with there is just it's an important enough moment and these relationships are important enough. It's littered throughout Scripture. This is an important enough conversation to have, even if it's going to be, we're going to need to extend grace in every way. Mm-hmm. I think another thing that's coming out right now is we just have been maybe putting off this conversation too long. That's not, it's just collectively.
Yep. I think some of us thought, there are a lot of people in the white community, and this is something I'm learning, who just thought this is over.
Mm-hmm.
Like, didn't we fix this?
Yeah.
Like, didn't we fix this? You know, LeBron James is rich. So isn't everything okay now?
That's what he was saying with starting the podcast. I didn't mean that to say, it just, you're hoping maybe.
You're like,
we had a black president.
Like, yeah,
we had
a black
president. You have very prominent black figures.
And then you're listening to your black brothers go, no, it's not.
It's not over.
I'm still dealing with this pain, or I'm still dealing with things you don't know about.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the anger. None of us condone the riot, the violence, the tearing up of people's businesses. That's an awful thing. But the anger is something we need to ask. Well, that's real. It's there. So that means, okay, let's have some conversations.
Yeah.
Let's at least talk. That's where it begins. And I don't know what all the solutions are. I don't think they're easy, and I don't think there's any one solution. And I really don't think the hope is in politics. I mean, we need some political solutions, but politics isn't going to bring us together. If that had happened, it would have worked by now.
Mm-hmm.
But I have seen it. You've seen it. The churches have often failed. Please, I don't want to say that. Churches have often failed to do what we needed to do here. But I have seen unity brought about by the gospel that nothing else can bring.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something we need to long for. And it's something our world, our country desperately needs. And you know what? I don't want to sound like an idealist here or something. But you know what? This our country has dealt with racial sin and injustice from its founding. We didn't live up to our highest ideals,
mm-hmm.
that all men are created equal. That is, you know, that is a great ideal, and it has created more prosperity and freedom, the American experiment, than I think any nation in the world. I'm a proud American. But at the same time that I can say I love my country and thank God for what America has been in the world, at the same time I can say from the very beginning we didn't live up to our highest ideals.
Right.
And that bitter root is planted deep, and we're still dealing with it. But you know what? We can deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
I heard a black preacher say once to a white congregation, and I think I know his name, but I'm not going to call it because I may miss it. But a black preacher was asked to address a big church, and it was a predominantly white church.
Uh-huh.
And he said, and it was a beautiful message. Listen to the whole thing. He said, it's not your fault, but it is your problem.
Mm.
And I liked what he said. He said, it's not your fault. He said, I know none of you own slaves. I know none of you think that, you know, and probably I'm speaking to people, and he's probably being more gracious than maybe
of course,
we deserve.
Of course.
But he was saying, you know, none of you are racist. None of you had marched with the Ku Klux Klan. None of you did anything like, you know, and again, he's being very gracious. But he's saying, it's not your fault, but it is your problem.
Mm.
We're all here together now. Tony Evans used to say, we came over on different ships, but we're in the same boat now.
Mm.
And it is our world, our brokenness, our sinfulness that we see collectively as a community, and we have to be willing to address it.
Mm-hmm.
We have to be willing. We can't ignore it. We can't just put our fingers in our ears and say, that doesn't exist. Not when we have good brothers and sisters around us saying, yeah, it does. Mm-hmm. It does exist. Please listen to me.
Right.
Please listen to me.
Yeah.
And I think we just need to say, okay.
Right.
Tell me. And that's what we're going to try to do.
Yeah. And especially when you are called to love in a way that is so much more than that. You
right.
are called to love in a way that's so much greater than, I mean, I loved what you were saying earlier, even referring back to some of the premarital counseling concepts. It's not about winning here an argument. It's not about winning, coming out looking right on a discussion. It's about listening to somebody that you, especially as a follower of Christ, are called to love as an image bearer of God, as a brother or sister in Christ.
Yeah,
you got to do better. We just got to listen, and that's why I'm excited. What time is the panel tonight? This is Wednesday. We're recording this.
Yeah, if somebody I don't even know if anybody will have access to this before tonight. But 6 o'clock tonight, mm-hmm. Wednesday, and again, if all goes well, I just have to put that qualifier because sometimes there's a technical issue. But we hope to be able to post it to our social media platforms, and the title of the panel will be "Help Me Understand." Help me understand. So if you go to our platforms, it should be there somewhere. And hopefully we'll be able to post that and you can listen in if you weren't able to listen in live on Wednesday night.
And then just to button up, we are this weekend again. Hopefully you can join us. If you can, join us live, one of our services here.
Right.
And if not, we'll stream on live. Like
still going to be online. So we know not everyone's coming back first week. We know a lot of people are going to hang back, and they're just, you know, it's fine. Mm-hmm. Everyone comes at this from a little different context. Some people really do need to wait a little longer. That's fine. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You're not second class. You're not, you know,
mm-hmm.
we're all in this together. We will be online 9:30, 11:30 talking to you. And I pretty much know this weekend and maybe for maybe forever, but certainly for weekends to come, I'm going to be talking to more people online than live and in person. And that's okay. That's okay. Mm-hmm. We're glad you're tuning in. Many people have connected with us online during this time.
Yeah.
Living in Pennsylvania and Illinois, I mean, it's amazing. So please tune in, keep connected. We're not forgetting our online audience. But yes, it is going to be good to physically be able to gather with people that we know and love in our church family and this weekend.
And speaking of people that connect online, thank you, podcast listeners. For listening to the Ricecast.
Hardcore podcast listeners.
We'll remember that
several
weeks ago.
I didn't know we had hardcore podcast listeners.
I'm sure
listeners.
I'm talking directly to my mom. Talking directly to Sue Brewer. Thank you for being a listener of the podcast.
And my mom listens. So we got two mothers.
There we go.
Our two moms are our hardcore Rice Castle.
They're first. I hear about it when it's a couple of days late. I get a text. Well, thank you guys for listening. As always, you know, leave a review on the podcast. That's always helpful. Share it with your friends. Love when we see that stuff or hear from you on a topic that we should cover, something we should talk about. Always open to that type of thing. And we will be back with you next week.
Thanks so much.